tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks very much indeed, Pat, and welcome back to the final hour of Tip Today. We're live from Pier Street in Nenagh today. And do keep calling. Trudy is ready to take your calls on 1800-938-007. Now, Thurles woman Tracy Haid is set to feature on tonight's episode of You Should Really See a Doctor on TV. Tracy has spent years suffering from two debilitating conditions, and she's online with me now. Good morning to you, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, and good to talk to you. Can you tell us what you've been suffering with over the years, Tracy?
Well, I've suffered with endometriosis since I've been a teenager.
What exactly is that?
It's where the lining of the uterus grows outside the uterus, and it attaches itself on to the ovaries, the bowels, different things. And every time you bleed every month, it bleeds, causing internal bleeding and pain. A lot of pain.
I was going to say that. And this has been going on for a lot of years, Tracy.
Well, I've had it. Well, yeah, since I was in secondary school, I've been suffering with severe pain every month when I get my period.
And in terms of the pelvis then, tell me about that.
That started when I was pregnant. I was about 7 weeks when I was starting to get twinges of pain in my pelvis. And it only just got worse. Now, I got physio when I was pregnant, and I got a pelvic band, which kind of helped, but do you know, as you can't take painkillers, paracetamol wasn't worth it, so I just said no point.
Good. So you've
and generally,
had, yeah,
it clears up after you have the baby, like, but it didn't for me.
It didn't for you?
No, I was that percentage of women where it doesn't clear up.
And is it like a dislocation of the pelvis in some way?
It is, the pelvis softens and it kind of can come apart a bit.
Yes.
But then all the muscles around it get disturbed as well. And that's what causes more pain.
So between the pelvic issue and the endometriosis, you're in pain virtually all of the time.
I was in pain every single day.
I presume you went everywhere and anywhere to get something done.
Oh, I had been to my GP. I got referred up to Clonmel. I was referred to Waterford Hospital to get treatment for the orthopaedics because they weren't sure had it affected the bone.
Right.
But I even then, one day, I was like, seeing the ad for You Should Really See a Doctor, and I said, here, it's worth a shot. Probably won't contact me. And they did.
And before we talk about that, the endometriosis, that's notoriously difficult to diagnose, I believe.
It is. You have to have a laparoscopy.
To have
it diagnosed. A laparoscopy, where they go in. It's the keyhole surgery, basically.
Okay.
You go into your belly button and another hole down another part of your belly.
Okay.
They can't diagnose it any other way because it doesn't show up on scans, it doesn't show up on MRIs, anything, unless you have a cyst. It's the only way you'll see it.
So I presume that makes it very frustrating then if you're trying to get a diagnosis and, you know.
Doctors tell you, and I have been told so many times over the years, oh, it's all in your head.
My God.
They don't believe the pain you're in. A doctor this year, before I got referred up to Dublin to the Coombe Hospital, to Dr. Hugh O'Connor, even in Clonmel, had said to me, that pain is in your head. And I went, said to him simply, are you the specialist in endometriosis? And he went, well, no. And I went, then we'll leave that to the specialist. Thank you very much.
And can you tell, how profound was the pain, Tracy? I mean, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad was it?
An 8 to 10. There were days where I could barely move. And right. Even the strongest painkiller, like I was taking Tramadol, didn't touch it.
And then to have people not believing you.
That used to really kill me for years. It's something you have to learn to deal with and how to cope with.
So tell me, you saw this ad then for the TV program, and
yeah,
you applied and they accepted you.
Yeah, I was very surprised because I didn't think that could happen for me anyway.
Right. And these people took you seriously, obviously?
Yeah, they did, definitely.
Right.
What they said to me is they wanted to create awareness for women's issues.
Right.
As they're doing the menopause on the show as well and everything. So that's why they accepted me onto it, to help create awareness, because there are probably thousands of mothers out there with this type of issue and aren't getting taken seriously.
Right. And were they able to help you medically?
They were. They sent me for physiotherapy up in the Milltown Physio Centre in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
and they did a thing called dry needling. It's all going to be on the program.
Right.
It, to me, it was a miracle treatment.
Was it?
Literally, within 20 minutes of, you know, the, getting the treatment done, the minute I turned back over, because I couldn't lie on my back before without severe pain, I couldn't believe it.
That's something. The pain levels, that's something like acupuncture, but not quite acupuncture.
It is, no, and it doesn't. To me, it didn't hurt me.
Right.
My pain levels every day were worse than the actual needles twanging the muscles.
Right.
And that's what they do. They go in, they kind of, as I say, twang them a bit, and that works the knots out of the muscles.
Now, I must admit, I had that dry needling for another issue, and I found it very painful to have, but it was better than the situation you were in, I presume.
Compared to the pain I used to deal with every day, one muscle twitching at the one time, that was nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And
it was just a bit.
And you noticed an immediate difference?
An immediate difference, yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
Pain levels went from like 8 to a 10 down to a 2.
So, how are you right now?
Brilliant. I'm still going for physio.
Right.
And I do my
that's for the pelvic issue, I presume. Yeah.
Yeah. The Coombe, I'm up in the Coombe Hospital. They've continued the physio I was getting up there. And I even had my last session last Wednesday and she worked out another knot, which has completely reduced my pain levels again. I wouldn't even, they're about a 1 at the moment. If they do twinge, most of the time now at the moment, I'm pain-free.
And where the endometriosis is concerned?
I had surgery in September to remove it, and I'm on a medication which is helping suppress it, and also I don't get a monthly cycle, so as well I'm pain-free on that side.
So is this now, a completely new lease of life for you?
It is a completely new lease of life, absolutely. I don't know myself. Like, I'd be running up and down the stairs now, and I'm doing more things at home and housework, and I've even taken up a new sport.
Have you?
Archery. The Dueler's Ailer Archers.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant.
And that's really good for the posture as well, because now I stand up straight. I don't kind of slouch anymore, which is helping the pelvis as well.
What about to your emotional health and your mental health over the years? I mean, if you're in constant pain, I would imagine that's a drag, to say the least.
I was going for counselling constant.
Were you?
Through it all. Now, they did try to put me on antidepressants once or twice, but they didn't agree with me.
Right.
I ended up hospitalised because of antidepressants one day.
Did you?
I got very bad. I fell over and everything. It wasn't good for me at all.
Well, it affected your balance in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My balance, my head, my sight, I couldn't see properly and I was nauseous, everything.
Good God.
They just did not agree with me at all.
Right, so you had to deal with it without medication then?
Learn to deal with it, learn to cope with it, and different techniques of relaxation, like the archery relaxes me.
Right.
That's another outlet. You know, you have to have these outlets. And I also do now a bit of craft courses with Anew here in Thurles. They do on a Wednesday morning. That's what I'm currently at the group there.
Very good.
And it's great.
And
it's
that focuses you. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's the idea. You find things that focus your mind and help you kind of relax, and then you learn to relax and get through the things that were bothering you.
Yeah, it's amazing. And of course, one of the big issues, I mean, if you had a broken leg, you'd have a cast on and everybody could see it.
Yeah.
With what you were suffering with, it was invisible largely.
Bar my limp, because I couldn't walk properly, no one would have known to look at me.
That there was anything the matter.
And you learn to hide the pain.
Wow. And how would you hide such awful pain as that? How would you do that?
I have different defense mechanisms. I tend to laugh if I get a bad twinge of pain. Or you'll probably see that in the show. I did do that quite a bit, and I was told that was one of my defense mechanisms.
Isn't that interesting?
And take painkillers, walk slow, or just sometimes not go out.
Right, that you'd stay in just to deal with it.
Yeah.
How does it affect relationships? I mean, not to be too personal, but I mean, if you're there and you're suffering with a great deal of pain, is it difficult to relate to you, to communicate with you?
Like, it's hard to expect another person to deal with what you're dealing with. Because if the pain comes, you can be moody.
Yeah.
You know, if you're very pain, you're going to be moody. You're not going to be happy-go-lucky all the time. And that affects a relationship. If you're constantly moody with a person, they're not going to want to be with you, are they?
It can be difficult, but it's a whole new lease of life for you.
It is a complete new lease of life.
What time is that program on at tonight, Tracy?
It's on at 8:30. on RTE1.
Okay, and a lot of people will be very interested in seeing that. If people are suffering, particularly from endometriosis, and I know a lot of people are, your advice to them, Tracy, would be what?
To push hard to get treatment and keep pushing at them. Even if they tell you it's in your head, say to them, look, I want maybe the laparoscopy done, and then at least they'll know.
Right.
If for sure, because I had to push for years, and this year at the most, I was told when I was initially referred up to Dublin, I was going to be 3 years on a waiting list.
My God.
And I just rang and said, can I be put on the cancellation list? And got extra letters from my doctor, because I have a 3-year-old daughter, which is very hard to deal with when you're in pain.
I can imagine.
Do you know, it's hard to do things with her, and
it,
not being able to get out, that used to hurt me the most, was not being able to get out and do things with her. Whereas now I can roll around the floor with her if I want to.
Isn't that fantastic? So you're going to have a great Christmas.
Oh, we're going to have a fabulous Christmas. My sister's coming home from Australia and everything, so we're all looking forward to it.
Well, listen, you deserve it after all those years of pain. Tracy, we were delighted to have you on today. We're looking forward to that program tonight. So RT1 at what time again?
Half past eight.
All right. Listen, we wish you all the best for the future, Tracy, and thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Goodbye.
That's Tracy Hayde there, and she is the feature of tonight's episode of You Should Really See a Doctor, and a good news story there. Isn't it good to hear a good news story? 083-311-3311.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today, 1-800-938-007. Now, St. Michael's National School and Autism Centre, Clochjordan, holding a Christmas concert in St. Michael's and St. John's Church, Clochjordan, on this coming Saturday night. And to talk to me about it, I'm glad to be joined in the studio now by Bonnie Hayes, who you will know extremely well, and Viv Dooley is with us as well, who is principal of the National School. You're both very welcome, and thanks very much indeed. Viv, can you tell us a bit about the school, particularly about the Autism Centre, because that's a relatively new addition to the school, isn't it?
It is, Fran, yeah. The Autism Centre, we're into our fourth year now. We opened up for 2 years in the building as it was, and we had a new building, new extension there built 2 years ago. So that took up a bit of ground in our yard and our play area. So following that, we were lucky enough, I suppose, to be able to purchase a field beside us. The neighbours didn't really want to sell a field, but we approached them and they supplied us with a field, so we bought that field this year. So we're fundraising as usual. Most schools are fundraising for something, but we're fundraising.
Very good. What do you intend doing with the field, Viv?
We're going to extend our ground and hopefully develop the field and have a good play area for the children.
Right. Tell me a little bit more about the Autism Centre specifically. What exactly is it?
Well, the Autism Centre is classrooms for children with autism. And it's different in the sense that you have 6 pupils in each classroom, you have a teacher and 2 SNAs. So the children, it makes life easier for the children in the sense that everything is pre-planned and they know where they're at. And a lot of children with autism are overwhelmed by numbers and by distractions.
Of course,
really.
Yeah.
So this kind of limits the distractions and it makes life easier for them at school.
Right. It's very interesting. And was there a blueprint for that in some way, or was it completely your own putting together of the centre?
Well, the centre, there was no blueprint. We drew the plans. We got planners in and they drew plans, and we rejected the first set of plans, didn't we, Bonnie?
Huh.
And we had our own input into it. I suppose there is a sort of a blueprint, all right, but each school has to develop their own fit.
Of course.
Whatever fits into their space. And every teacher then, I suppose, in an autism centre, they have their own ideas on what they'd like. So we were lucky in the sense that we started from scratch and we went into a totally new building. We were 2 years without it,
right,
which gave us a good idea of maybe of what we wanted.
And how many pupils with autism would you have?
We have 12 in the centre. We have about 15 or 16 in the school. Some children with autism are able to manage.
Right.
Outside.
Yeah, because it's a large spectrum, isn't it?
It is a huge spectrum. Yeah. It's a huge spectrum. And like, people focus on the autism side of a child, but every child is an individual, and there's lots of complex needs and lots of different needs. Every child has needs.
Mm.
So, like, we've 12 pupils now at the moment in the centre, covering Nina, Burs, Cain, Clochjordan, Moneygall, local children around us.
Very good. And they're doing well?
Oh, doing very well.
That's
very
great,
well. And a great
it?
Addition to the school. absolute great addition to the school.
Fundraising, obviously, extremely important for the school.
Fundraising, friend, any school will tell you, is very important. And without local contributions, to be honest about it, most schools wouldn't be running and running at the level they're running. So fundraising is all the time.
All right, which brings us to your Christmas concert then that's happening on a Saturday night. What's going to make up the concert, Bonnie?
Well, it was one of the highlights. There'll all be highlights on the night, but the In Tune for Life Orchestra. This idea was born maybe sometime in July of that. I took it and spoke to Mike Murphy and Ned Kelly of the orchestra, and they jumped at it. So I had to come back then and put it to the board of management, and they went for it. Then the venue was the next thing. So I must say that Father Des and Father Gerard and Father Mike gave us full permission. And then we went to the parish council in Clochjordan, and they gave us the go-ahead, and we planned from there. But the artists themselves, you couldn't have a concert without Tom Williams in it.
Yeah, he has to be there.
Tom has to be there with the pupils from St. Yeah. Michael's. You know, we were well aware of last year, the CD we made for the centenary.
Absolutely.
Celebrations.
Fantastic it was too,
and
yeah.
Thanks to TIPFM for, they're still playing that.
You're welcome.
That has been very, very popular. So the kids will support Tom in that on the night. We have another local group then called Weave. Weave are a very good group. They consist of four from around the area. They do a lot of their own stuff. I don't know how you describe it. Maybe they do some contemporary. But they have a lead singer, Natasha, and she has a fabulous voice. Fabulous, and they will be backed by the orchestra on the night.
Is that?
And then the orchestra will do their own program during the show. You
know? All right, and it's quite an eclectic orchestra, isn't it? Because I'm looking at a photograph of them. It's made up of traditional instruments and harps and fiddles,
absolutely,
and all sorts.
Yes,
of stuff.
It's it's amazing the arrangements they do, and they range from maybe 14 to 18, maybe 20 years of age. You know, about 60 teenagers and musicians.
Isn't that marvelous altogether? Yeah. Now, if you want tickets for this, how?
Tickets can be got through the school. The school number is 0505-42431. Or 086-378-2838.
All right.
Or for many school staff or the board of management of the school. They're selling very well. There isn't an awful lot of tickets left, but
right,
there's still a few available.
Right, and it's going to be a fantastic night all together. And as you were saying, Viv, I mean, this is vital to the school. It's vital that people would come along and support this.
Absolutely, yeah. We've always had great support locally, but it's nice to actually put on entertainment rather than just go looking for money. And this is going to be a fantastic night. I'm really looking forward to it. I've heard part of the orchestra before. We had the Flay in Clochjordan last year, which gave us a taste of what the orchestra are like.
Sure, yeah.
And like the opportunity for the children in the school to actually sing with a full orchestra behind them.
Isn't that fantastic?
Most adults have never had that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I think it's a huge, great opportunity for the children. We're really looking forward to it. There's going to be a buzz on the night.
Well, it's something they will always remember. That's
absolutely,
for sure,
yeah,
anyway.
Absolutely.
And just to mention that Tom Williams will be there again with the school pupils and all of that.
Absolutely.
This is great to see you all. Are you looking forward to Christmas?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Kicks off Saturday night.
Kicks off Saturday night. All right. So Christmas concert, the concert in St. Michael's and St. John's Church.
And the church is a fabulous setting. And the acoustics in the place will be incredible.
All right. Listen, it's great to see you both. And thanks very much.
Thanks, Fran.
Cheers, Fran.
Welcome.
Thank you.
That's to Viv and Bonnie and everybody looking forward to that great night in wonderful Clochjordan on this coming Saturday night. All right. Let's take a break. We've got more Tip Today live from Nina in just a few moments.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
A Taste of Ross Grey kicks off tomorrow and runs through until the 10th of December. And I'm just looking at the blurb on it here, and it looks like it's going to be a fantastic event indeed. Glad to be joined on the line now once again by Peter Kelly, a.k.a. Frank. Good morning to you, Peter. How are you?
Good morning, Fran. I'm great.
And welcome to Tip FM again.
Thanks again.
It looks like it's going to be even better than last year.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Looking forward to the weekend. Lots of fun and games planned for the weekend ahead. So there's over 40 exhibitors going to be there for the craft and craft fair. And I loved the idea of Santa's going to be back in Ross Grey again with all these little helpers already. And I've been asked, especially by Santa, and some locals to provide some snow, which will be coming tomorrow morning.
And this is, I mean, part of the whole magic of this. There will be snow in Ross Grey.
There certainly will. So we're looking forward to being there and creating it.
Right. Tell me about this. I mean, of course, it's in the grounds of lovely Damer House there. And
yes.
What, you will cover that with your snow.
Yeah. So all the Damer House is an amazing period property. Mm. And last year, there was a lovely art exhibition there, and they were giving tours of Damer House during the weekend, which was amazing as well, because it's a very historic building and it's set straight in the middle of the castle grounds, which are again amazing. So it's a really unique property, I think, for Ross Grey. There's nowhere in Ireland that's got such a beautiful castle with such a beautiful period house set in the centre. It couldn't be more Christmas-like. It's like a chocolate box.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And,
it's Dickensian looking, actually, isn't
so
it, with
Dickensian.
The snow.
It's
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah.
And especially with all the fresh trees, there's over 100 trees coming in at the moment, and then we'll be snowing the trees, and we'll be snowing the entire inside. The walls will be covered in with snow, and we'll also have falling snow as well.
Oh, it's just magical. Now, of course, Santa Claus will be in the grotto inside of the castle's drawbridge as well. And what
exactly,
a backdrop that is.
Amazing setting again.
Yeah, lots and lots of visitors last year. I mean, it was unprecedented, the success of this. In fact, I noticed that other areas now are sort of stealing from Ross Grey on this.
That's what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. It's good to spread the love.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
And Ross Grey have been amazing. It's our sixth year, and they've raised over 70,000 for local charities and organisations, you know. And so it's a credit to Michael Smith and to Paul, who's in the White House. They're on the committee, and it's a great team, and they've been working closely with the OPW and local councils to get this to the size and scale it is right now. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And fair play to the OPW, because sometimes it's difficult enough to get access to these wonderful buildings, but that doesn't seem to have been a problem in Ross Grey.
Yeah, I think they've worked very closely with the committee, and they've always been looking after the property, and they know how much the property means to the town. And I think it's such I love when the Americans say, it's so amazing they built this town around this little castle. It's actually the castle, or built the castle in the middle of a town, but
yes.
the castle came first.
Absolutely. So there's Christmas market, Santa's Tower, fashion show, concerts, carol singing. There's food, needless to say, and crafts and all sorts of stuff as well.
It's the one place you should be for Christmas. If you want to get the Christmas spirit, then head to Ross Grey this weekend.
Absolutely, for sure. When can we expect you back on screen again?
So I'm back on Monday night at 9:30 on RT2.
Very good. And that's for?
For Say Yes to the Dress.
All right. Well, listen, we all look forward to that. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Peter, and thanks very much indeed. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
That's Peter Kelly there, better known, I suppose, as Frank, the wedding planner himself and fashionista and all of that. Well, the Taste of Ross Grey kicking off tomorrow in the grounds of beautiful Damer House and running right through until Sunday, the 10th of December, and everybody will be made welcome in Ross Grey for that. All right, we're going to take a break, and then Joanna's that is our psychotherapist, will be joining us live in studio.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Welcome back to TIP Today. Our prizes today are €25 voucher for Moroni's Footwear, celebrating their Echo collection, and our 7-foot-tall Christmas tree in association with our very good friends at Pine Nurseries in Burncourt. Both those prizes going to Mary Tynan from lovely Calais. So there you are, Mary, and I hope you enjoy those prizes. Now, good to be joined in the studio by our psychotherapist, Joanna Burkery. Good morning to you, Joanna.
Good morning, friend.
It's nice to see you today. We've been talking on the program, and a lot of traction on text about this as well. Last night there was a program on RTE about carers and about the trials and tribulations of carers. Now, we did a whole series on this program ourselves about it, speaking to carers. It's how difficult is it to be a carer? Do you get a lot of people coming into you with issues that emulate that start off with people being a carer?
Usually I don't, until the person that they're caring for has passed on and is deceased, because then they have time to look after themselves. Because the big dilemma with carers is that their whole identity is being the caregiver. And when that person that needs their care is gone, then they don't know how to look after themselves. It's almost like, as a caregiver, they just forget about their own needs, and their priority is, let's say, granny. We're talking, you know, Mary's looking after granny. It's pretty stereotyped, but Mary forgets about her own needs because everything is revolved around granny. And what happens with families is that everybody thinks, well, Mary's at home, she's been looking after granny, and they come in and visit. And they nobody rarely says to right. Mary, how are you, Mary?
It's accepted that she's the carer.
It's accepted she's the carer, and it's accepted that she becomes almost invisible in the care. Nobody comes in and says, you know, Mary, how are you doing?
Mm. You know, would you like a break yourself?
Would you like a break? Or, you know, how are things today? And if Mary says they're frantic, you know, I'm going to visit for half an hour. Is there anything? Do you want to go away for a walk? Just recognizing that granny wouldn't be at home, or granny wouldn't be being cared for on a personal one-to-one level if it wasn't for Mary.
And because so many women are carers, literally their lives are put on hold then.
And it's sad, because what happens is usually it's Mary, and I'm using stereotypes thing here, but it could be Mary, you know, I'm just using it for this example. You see, Mary may have reared, you know, four children, and they've been her focus all her life, and then there's that empty nest, and next thing granny gets sick or falls and breaks her hip, and then Mary automatically falls into that role, because in the years she's been rearing her four kids, she's lost herself. So it's actually almost an automatic thing that she falls into another role of caring.
What do you say to somebody like that then? I mean, how can you rebuild self with that person?
What I say to people about this is that selfishness is not a sin. That's the first thing. I often speak about, you know, a Ryanair or Aer Lingus flight or Flybe, whatever. They always say, you know, and if a sudden drop of cabin pressure occurs, a mask will fall in front of you, and you attend to your own mask before you attend to others. I say that people need to attend to their own mask in life first. So if Mary's looking after granny, Mary needs to look after herself. Granny is a priority in her life, but the main priority actually is herself.
I met many of these people through Family Carers Ireland, mm-hmm. and we interviewed them in depth, and their story, I found them inspirational people in their own way, that they were so selfless. But that's part of the problem for them then, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, and that is the key of the problem, because they're selfless mm. and they forget about themselves. And what can happen, not only can they burn out, but they can get resentful. And they can get resentful that nobody... And it isn't that they're consciously doing this, it's kind of like just out of consciousness or out of awareness that they find they're cranky, you know, or they find they get bitter when they see, you know, women in the hairdressers, or, you know, little things. They just, this resentment, and because it's not expressed, because they're so used to being the caregiver, it boils away inside in them, and oftentimes it can affect their health.
And particularly, I would imagine, their mental health.
Absolutely. Well, resentment, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And then the granny actually gets the brunt of it sometimes, and the visitors, if there's visitors. So what I would say to carers is set it up so that when visitors come, that Mary isn't making tea and tart and cream for the visitors, that she's using that time for herself. And that if I am visiting granny and I know Mary is there, send Mary a text and say, I'm planning on coming over this evening at around 6 o'clock. You know, if you need to do anything for an hour, I'll visit granny for an hour. And then it's really important that I'm there at 6 o'clock, because it almost is another kick in the A for Mary if I come at 7 o'clock and go, oh, I got delayed, I was getting my nails done, la 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 la. It's really important that...
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I would have known of a carer situation who was such a decent, wonderful human being that when people did come to visit the patient, so to speak, I mean, she had to put on a spread of food and you know, she became a caterer as well as a carer. And it was all out of goodness. But still, I mean, it soaks up somebody's life, you know.
It soaks up somebody's life and they become resentful and they, and then when that person, that patient or person they're caring for passes on, they feel really, you know, really hard done by and really resentful, especially if sometimes, and this is, I have a lady coming to me and she's in this situation and it's 4 years after her mother died, and she was from a big family, she was the one, but the assets were all divided equally. And she was getting the carer's allowance, which is minimum considering the cost it would have been to have her granny in a nursing home. Sure. By from the health board. But she's really resentful that everyone else got an equal share and she did all this work. And it has really fractured the family and it has fractured her relationships. So now she was isolated when she was looking after her mother, because her mother had dementia. But she's also isolated now from her family because she's now saying,
isn't that fair. Sad?
It's so sad. It is so sad, and she has given so much of herself without attending to her own mask first.
Isn't that very interesting? Carers, of course, come in all age groups. And I mean, we heard about that fantastic young boy from Rathgeven National School who was caring for his older brother and, mm-hmm. and, you know, a vital part of his brother's life. But there's also something we were talking about earlier on where you have two elderly people, maybe close to 80 or whatever, one looking after the other, one, the carer, even at that age, but then the carer becomes sick.
And it's usually the carer that becomes sick because, you see, it's a magnified piece of what I'm saying. The carer is looking after the sick person and they're both the same age and their body is reaching that level where it's like older people are more susceptible to flu and to chronic conditions. So the carer will burn out much quicker. And people focus on the person that's sick and they don't once again focus on the carer. The carer needs the support. The sick person is getting it. Like, yeah, sure, visit and do all that, but keep an eye on the person who's doing the caring. They need the support and they need the help and the recognition even.
And it's a very interesting text in here, Joanne. It says, Fran, what can I do with the carer in our family who treats the rest of the family with a grunt or a snide remark while we're visitors in the house? Now, I don't have to be a psychotherapist to know that there's resentment there.
That's the overflow of unspoken resentment. Absolutely.
Isn't that interesting now?
Isn't it interesting? That's what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
There it is. Yeah, what happens is it's kind of like it's passive-aggressive is the term for that. It's like that resentment is boiling up and boiling up and then it just ekes out and leaks out and it's not clean, you know. It's not like I'm so pissed off because I'm the one that's here. It just leaks out and then people find it really hard to care for the carer because now you're in a loop here because the carer is grumpy and resentful and bitter but not saying it. And then the visitors come in and they just walk through the kitchen down to the bedroom to see Granny because Mary is grunting
at them and with the greatest of respect to our texter, wouldn't it be simple to see that is the issue, and shouldn't they sit down with this carer and say, listen, we know that you're under pressure, we recognize all the amazing work that you do, because maybe it's just a bit of recognition, you know.
Maybe it's just a bit of recognition and maybe it's, you know, hey, you know, I can see you're really under pressure here.
Yeah.
And maybe
just to acknowledge.
Yeah, and maybe I've been ignoring you. Maybe I haven't acknowledged how much I appreciate, like acknowledge that something has been missed along the way. I remember calling to a house and they were looking after somebody who was dying. And everybody was going in. And the very minute I went into the house, the smell of flowers, this lady was a doctor, and loads of people were bringing flowers. And I brought a huge big box of chocolates. And this lady was in her end stages of pancreatic cancer, and they looked at the chocolates and looked at me as if, you know, you're crazy. And I said, no, these are for ye, the carers.
Nice one, yeah.
And they still, like, I'd never met her family before. I knew her through my work. And they said, you know, we've had an abundance of people coming in here, and nobody ever, ever brought anything for us. And they were delicious chocolates. Yeah.
Would you talk to me as well a little bit about the G word, about guilt? Because I know that towards the end...
I love the G word. I was wondering what were you going to come up with, Fred?
Because it comes up all the time that there's guilt. I mean, you must come across this in your work all of the time. But even if a carer has been amazing for years and years, and towards the end, it may have to be the case that somebody has to go into a nursing home or some form of facility or service. And then they have tremendous guilt, even after all the amazing work they've done.
I'm a nurse. I see it all the time. And sometimes I see that it's once again lack of communication, because what's happening here is that granny isn't actually being cared for adequately at home, because sometimes the care needs more than one person.
Yeah.
Like the care lifting granny, turning her, all that kind of stuff, getting her out to a commode, washing her. Can't be done by one person, and sometimes enough is enough. And sometimes granny's actually looked after much better in the nursing home. But really what's happening there is that guilt is there, but also it's that lack of purpose. What do I do now? Because it's, in a sense, what's happened, it's perceived that they have failed. And that's when the guilt comes in. The truth is they haven't failed at all.
So, final piece of advice, because I know a lot of carers listen to us, because we often hear from, final piece of advice would be what? Is it about the mask? Is it making sure you're okay?
It's about making sure that you're okay, and it's also about asking for help and also taking in the help that's offered, instead of saying, oh, I'm fine, I'm grand.
Because people will let it be, you know.
Because you get into the habit of, it's interesting, caregiving or caretaking, they give the care, but they can't take it back. So it's completing that circle. Sometimes being the caregiver, and sometimes just sitting back and taking in the care that's been offered.
It's complex, to say the least, isn't it? Next week, tell me about next week. What are you going to talk to us about next week?
I want to tell people out there, and tell myself and you, Fran, that in psychotherapy and psychology, they have now estimated what the 5 major stressors are in life, and the first is bereavement or separation, the second is moving house, and the third is
Christmas. Wow. There's no surprise, really, I suppose.
So if people are getting stressed out and getting blown away by all that expensive marketing that's targeting to say that everything should be hunky-dory and happy and rosy and warm, and all that Christmas tree should just be up and twinkling lights at you, and nobody should snap at one another. There's so much anxiety around Christmas, so we're going to talk about anxiety next week and work in a little bit of maybe some practices that might help people that are getting caught up in this crazy,
in the drama of it all. All right, yes. If people want to talk to you in the meantime, Joanna's, how can they do so?
086-338-3398.
All right, always a pleasure. Thanks very much indeed, Joanna's. That's Joanna's Burkery, our psychotherapist. Now, lots of text coming in, and I know that Trudy is going to have a look at that before we leave you. Just to repeat again that the winner of our prize today is Mari Tynan from Killay. Well done to you, Mari. And you win our Christmas tree and, of course, our voucher for Moroni's Footwear as well, which is a €25 voucher. And there's also the possibility on this coming Friday of an upgrade there, where that is concerned, to a pair of those wonderful Echo shoes from Moroni's in Clonmel. Now, before we go, Trudy, you're going to have a look at what's coming in on text. And again, lots of stuff in on text.
Yeah, an awful lot of stuff in. Eileen Connolly actually was just in touch, and it's funny because I literally got two of those calls myself, Eileen. I didn't answer them. They came in from the Outer Hebrides or somewhere. She said that people, the foreign calls have started again. I don't think they ever stop. Mm. You just have to really look at your phone. I mean, I was saying in the office that I just got the two phone calls, and then Catherine, our lovely sales representative, said she got one yesterday. So just watch your phones and just, you know, watch the numbers before you answer. Eileen Armstrong was in touch to say, very interesting show again today. And a funny one here, I'm sorry. Somebody was asking, well, not us as it turns out, were they listening to us? And then she realised she hadn't texted her husband that she'd actually text us. So I'm delighted to know that you're asking your husband to tune into us, and thank you for tuning into
very
us
good
too. Then Martina Phelan got in contact. She said, hi Fran, I would just like to comment on the carers in crisis. I have great admiration for families who care for their loved ones in their own homes. It's a difficult job. The elderly man who was looking after his wife with Alzheimer's was an inspiration. He loved his wife so much. When I was listening to the Minister for Social Affairs talking about the changes that were coming on stream in 2018, I was not convinced. These changes are definitely going to happen. Then in relation to Mary's interview again, and I agree with that woman, they don't give a damn. But remarks about Charlie, do me a favour. Our memories aren't that bad. The boy was no angel.
No, in fairness, she did not. In fact, she said that Charlie was one of the reasons that she stopped supporting Fianna Fáil. And she made reference to Jack Lynch, the real Taoiseach, as being the man. So
I think it's Charlie in the pension. And then a couple of others, again, more than a couple of others. Someone should tell our government that we don't care about other countries' homelessness. Their job is to look after our own people. That's one person's view. Margaret Whelan got in touch to say that they don't care about anyone but themselves. That's in reference to the government. In relation to the housing meeting tonight, and Marie got in touch. She said, talking is no good. It's just going to be a talking shop tonight. And how are people with no transport expected to get to the hotel? And she wonders why it's out of the town. Mike got in touch, and we will be speaking to Mike tomorrow. He's a carer, and he watched that programme last night, and he points out how difficult it is to be a carer and how invisible you are to the world, and people don't realise, like, it's a 24/7 job and how difficult it is. Another texter got in contact to say, totally agree with you, Fran. The government have no shame. The HSE have less than none, and they're full top heavy with managers and assistants. They should all hang their head in shame. And that comes in from Fran. Morning Fran, as a full time carer I live in fear of the future for my special needs child. The things that are going on in the lives of carers and the cared for persons, people in this country are an absolute disgrace. Eileen got in touch. She feels that we should have more young people in government, more fresh blood on that. Breach then says it's not just the government that are to blame for the nursing home situation. She feels the health boards don't give enough help hours to help keep people at home. And Jeanette Condon got in touch, and she was going into work, so she wasn't able to come on with us, but she said it was very hard to watch. I think we've spoken to Jeanette before. Very hard to watch last night, as it's very close to home. I'm a carer to my 11-year-old son who attends respite, and the service only has the funding to open for half of the month. They open the same amount now as when my son started 7 years ago, and the amount of families extra now is unreal. Only recently getting 10 more families were added to the list, so everybody getting less and less. So telling me something like the list is now at 70 and new people coming in, which they're perfectly entitled to, absolutely, but it's more and more for less and less.
That's incredible. Now I know it was too late for your list, but Maggie was on to us to say, and we'll give her the last word as well. Very easy for that lady, and that's making reference to Joanne's, to say the carers should look after themselves first. Over the last 4 weeks, we've had 4 hospital admissions with our son sleeping in a hospital chair, worrying about his health declining, worrying about money, and our own other kids at home. I don't have the time or the energy to put myself first. Carers do not get enough support from the state. It's plain and it's simple. And that's it from us for today. Truly produced. Owen is on the way next. We've had a ball here in Nina. As always, we'll be back here on Friday. Looking forward to talking to you tomorrow. Bye-bye now.